D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. Willie, Derek, and I are live at First Horizon Park. Sounds host the Louisville Bats tonight. First pitch at 6:35, Throwback Thursday here at First Horizon Park. We are pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on Outkick. Chad, I want to do an exercise with you that we did amongst ourselves yesterday and our listeners. This is something that we are going to do periodically throughout the season. I thought a few weeks into the preseason and training camp was a good time. We're calling it the Cam Ward vibe check. So if I ask you that question, I'm asking you for your Cam Ward vibe check after 5 preseason series, a few weeks of practice, a highly publicized kerfuffle, that's the word I've landed on, with Jeffrey Simmons. Give me your Cam Ward vibe check.
Yeah, cautiously optimistic is what I'll go with the vibe on Cam Ward right now. I like most of what I've seen. I honestly like the whole dust up with Jeffrey Simmons. I think the Titans need a little bit of that, and Jeffrey Simmons doesn't always bring it at the right times, but it's kind of who he is. And I like that Cam Ward is the type that believes in himself and enough where he's going to go get in the face of Jeffrey Simmons and say something to him. So I think the Titans need a little bit more of that edge. I don't mind it coming from the quarterback position. So, look, I'm cautiously optimistic. There's some things that I really like. There's other times where he looks like a quarterback that's swimming mentally a little bit and is about a half second too late. And as you guys know, if you're a half second too late in this league, you're not going to complete many passes. And we've seen some of that from him too, which is to be expected with a new offense and starting out in the NFL. So, again, cautiously optimistic, but as you guys continue this exercise, check back with me in 2 weeks. That could change.
Fill in the blank for me, Chad. L'Jarius Sneed will play blank games for the Tennessee Titans this season.
5. I think the verdict is in that he's just not a guy who's going to be healthy throughout his career. So I am not optimistic on L'Jarius Sneed. I know he's gearing up for week one, but I think if you get a third of the season to a half of the season out of him, at this point in time, you're probably happy. That appears to be a bust of a signing for the Titans and what they went in with a guy who looked like he may have had some issues before they brought him in.
Now, when you look at that, Hutt, should they, if indeed that's the case, because, you know, he's not what we thought he was going to be. At least he wasn't last year because of the injury. And I'm hard pressed to say he would ever make it back to that level of football that he was playing in Kansas City. But with that being the case, it doesn't seem like the Titans have really addressed that position the way they needed to, knowing the history of his injuries. Listen, I know they got Brownlee Jr., but he's on one side. I know you brought in some other guys that are okay, but it doesn't seem like you really tried to address it. So that tells me that you are banking on L'Jarius Sneed being out there for majority of the season.
Yeah, and I think that's a mistake. And look, I mean, there were so many holes on this roster, D-Mace, as you know, going into this offseason that you could really – you could attempt to address, you know, some gushing holes with some bubble gum at some different spots, but you weren't going to get a complete fix at every spot. I think corner is one of those. It looks like a spot that it's going to need a high draft pick, especially if L'Jarius Sneed plays, you know, 5 games this year, as I'm predicting, or even if it's 8 or 9 games, you're going to need to use a high draft pick. But I also look at receiver. And if we're looking at the draft next year right now, if Cam Ward shows something, you're going to want to draft high to get someone to help him out on that side of the ball. And receiver is going to be a need too. So it's a bit of a mess right now with the corner situation, but you could say that about pass rusher, about edge. You could say that about a number of spots with the Titans right now where they just have too many issues to plug up in one off season. I think corner is one of those, and I think you're right. I think the organization is crossing their fingers, toes, and everything they can in hopes that he can complete a season healthy and be productive.
Now, another position or another player that I'm concerned about, not so much that it's his play, because coming into this offseason or into this training camp, we knew the guys that were injured. We knew the guys that were going to be on PUP. Legarius Sneed, Cushenberry, guys like that that were hurt last year, had to have surgery, so we knew they would be coming into camp sort of hobbled or managed. But Tavondre Sweat, now he's had some things happen that was out of his control, but it's concerning that I'm not seeing him on the field as much, and he's not playing in the games. And a big fella like that, I think you need the reps. And I understand he understands that too, and the Titans do as well. But guys like that that they're going to depend on, they haven't played much football in the offseason, well, in the preseason.
Yeah, it concerns me too. And, you know, we can sit and talk about the value of preseason, about what it means for the players and how much exactly, how many reps they need to gear up and get ready for the season. I'm looking at the number of soft tissue injuries that happen in week one of NFL seasons, and I'm thinking, you know, you need to throttle up a little bit in the preseason before you get out there and play in a regular season game. And I think we see a number of guys who don't get enough reps doing that, and then they get out there, and when they're going NFL game speed, injuries happen quicker. So that does concern me, and especially with someone the size of Tavondre Sweat. And also, it kind of goes back to the Titans' identity of who they are. Like, what are they telling us when they draft Tavondre Sweat in the second round? They're saying, we are going to build inside out. We are going to try to dominate physically in the interior of our defensive line with Jeffrey Simmons and with this guy who we think can be a difference maker with his size, strength, athleticism, all of that. And so then when you start to have injuries in those spots where you're trying to build your identity of being this tough physical team, it really hurts you settling in on that identity. And I think that's another downside if Tavondre Sweat, you know, isn't playing a lot or can't go the full season. So I'd like to see him get some more reps. I'd like to see him stay available a little bit more too. And I think that he could be a big part of whatever the next generation of Titans players will be in what they're trying to establish with that roster.
Chad Withrow is with us from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. You hear his colleague on our show as well, Chad joining us. And Chad, I'm looking ahead. We know that things are going to have to go right for them to have any kind of success, especially early in the season. And knowing the volatility of Amy Adams Strunk, if the Titans come out and go 1-6, 1-7, do you think that they would show the patience, or would you really be concerned that they would have a lot of pressure, and based on her track record, a John Robinson 2.0 making a big change in the middle of the season?
Willie, I think what the Titans need in ownership is someone with your temperament right now. You are.
What are you trying to say?
You are the most reluctant person to move on, right? To do something rash, to pull the plug on
somebody.
I
am more patient than most. Yes.
Yes.
Some say patient. Some say reluctant.
Right. What? I'm one that doesn't automatically take the low-hanging fruit. It's the coach's fault. I'm definitely like that.
Yes.
But I'm not sure Amy Adams is, or the mysterious people that surround her. And other than Chad Brinker, there's some people that I'm not sure we really know much about them, but they definitely have the voices. So I do wonder who, you know, how that process would go if they're really struggling.
Yeah,
which
and
they
I,
might.
Look, I say that as a compliment into what the Titans need right now. Like, there are times where, you just need to call it what it is and move on from someone. I just don't think now is the time. And I'm getting really tired of just the shifting of the blame game, right? It was, okay, you made the trade with A.J. Brown, you lose to the Eagles. John Robinson, it's your fault. You're fired. And then, okay, now the team is struggling and Mike Vrabel doesn't do everything I say, so Mike Vrabel, it's your fault. And then you go back to, okay, now it's Rand Carthon's fault. Well, now whose fault is it this year? Brian Callahan, since we're going back and forth from GM to coach? I'm with you, Willie. I don't think it's always just one thing. And to answer your question, absolutely not. I don't think she's going to have patience. I think if this team is 1-6 or 1-7, I think the writing's on the wall and they're going to be looking for a new coach, which means a new offense in year two for Cam Ward. And that's not a good thing. I mean, Titans fans should be rooting for Brian Callahan to do well this year so you can get some stability, especially with a young quarterback. If you've got high hopes for him, you want him to be in the same system. You want him to understand that offense. You really want Callahan and Cam Ward to sync up this year. But no, I mean, I think given her track record, going back to the John Robinson decision, which I thought was a bad one at the time. I thought the Mike Vrabel one was a bad one also. I don't think she's going to show a lot of patience. I mean, she wants to win and win quickly. Does that mean she expects to go to the playoffs this year? No. But if this team's 1-6, 1-7, 1-8, like we're talking about, no, I don't expect her to pull a Willie Donick and show patience. I do not expect that.
Chad, a couple of University of Tennessee questions. Last week we talked about the lucrative deal that they signed with Adidas. And now Danny White, who you have praised, right, and he's done a really good job. A lot of things are going well over there. They're selling tons of tickets, but it's certainly never easy to roll out when you're raising ticket prices. What do you think about the way he's doing it, right? He's being unabashed. Hey, we're raising ticket prices, and we need to pay the players. Like, what do you think that? How do you think that's going over as a sell?
I mean, look, I think it's okay as long as there's a demand for the tickets. But, like, this is going to turn quickly if the team is bad. You know, if they get disappointing basketball this year, well, suddenly, you know, that granddad who can't afford his ticket in the 300 levels that's, you know, complaining to the Knox News Sentinel that people aren't paying much attention to right now, you start paying attention to that when you start putting a bad product on the court or on the field. So they've got a waiting list for season tickets right now. They're sold at the capacity for everything. I think last I checked, there's like maybe two games that aren't complete sellouts right now, and those are going to be sellouts by the time they get here. So if you can pack 100,000 people in the stadium at those prices, good for you. But it's also riding a bet that you're going to be nationally relevant in football, in men's basketball, in baseball with all the improvements and renovations being done and how much they're going to jack up prices in that too. So, look, it's a dangerous game. I understand why Danny White is playing the game. It is to get more money so they can give it back to the players. I think he's very smart about that. But you start hiking up, you know, 4% season ticket price increases over and over again, at some point you could see the demand start to fall for tickets, and then you're going to have more of a problem when that happens. But, hey, if Tennessee continues to be relevant in all these sports, then he's going to get that money back in return. So I don't have a huge problem with it. But the moment it turns south, people are going to start complaining more and more.
I don't think anybody was surprised, based on what was said at the SEC Media Days, that Joey Aguilar has won the starting job. Do you have any sense, Chad, of the gap between Aguilar and the two young guys that have competed with him?
Yeah, so here's my big prediction that I threw out a while back. The first game that George McIntyre starts in college football will be at Vanderbilt. I really believe that this is the cost of college football right now. When Tennessee landed a five-star quarterback out of Brentwood Academy who had ties to Vanderbilt, my first thought was, okay, now they landed the number one quarterback in the country in the next class. As long as Faison Brandon is in Knoxville, I think that both Jake Merklinger and George McIntyre will move on and play their college football somewhere else, which is crazy to think about, but this is the ever-evolving, you know, shifting, rotating doors of college football quarterbacks everywhere. I think Joey Aguilar won the job, Willie, because he operates at a faster pace. He can get them moving quicker.
And he's also like 5 years older than McIntyre, right? I mean, that's a big gap.
His credit score is definitely higher than those guys, right? I mean, he's 25 yeah. years old. Like, he's applied for some loans at some point in his life. He's about to be 25. I mean, that's kind of the Hendon Hooker effect. You know, he was a 24-year-old.
He's older than Cam Ward.
Yeah, older than Anthony Richardson, older than a lot of guys. Anthony Richardson is going his third year in the league. I think he's older than him. It's crazy. But, no, I think that he functions high in that offense. He gets them moving faster, which Josh Heupel wants to do. They slowed it down the last 2 years. I think that was more of a function of the quarterback than anything else with Joe Milton and Nico. They want to get back to the speed they played at with Hendon Hooker. Joey Aguilar gives them a better chance to do it. I'll also say this about Joey Aguilar. The interception numbers are concerning. And I know that this is an offense that the way it's run, it limits turnover opportunities, interception opportunities. But I'd be a little bit worried about that if I were a Tennessee fan when I look at his interceptions. I also think he's a better athlete than the other two guys. I think he's going to run it a little bit more. So that's going to give them another dimension of the offense. So, no, it doesn't surprise me at all that he was named the starter.
5-3 in the league, 9-3 overall. Based on all that was thrown at them after the playoffs last year, would you sign up for that and say, yeah, that's a solid season, under the circumstances, especially in the backdrop of we're asking for more money. Like that, I feel like the more money you ask for, you're almost putting pressure on yourselves to win games. But for me, a 5-3, 9-3 would be a pretty good year.
Yeah, look, I would take that in a heartbeat. I think that'd be a huge success, considering you lost your, you know, 5-star quarterback after spring practice. I mean, I think 8-4, 5-4, that's the baseline of where I'd say, okay, pretty good season. You know, they did well with what they had. That's not some big disaster. I really look back at 2023 and that Joe Milton year, and I thought at the time that, okay, this kind of feels like the floor with Josh Heupel, which is a very good thing because we've seen Tennessee's floor go way lower than that. But when 8-4 and winning a bowl game is your floor, that's a good place to bottom out. And this feels like that for Tennessee. I could be wrong, could be surprised. They could be 6-6. They could be 7-5. But I think that 8-4, 9-3 range would be success for Tennessee. Willie, I think your scenario is a giant success. If they're 9-3, they're knocking on the door of the playoff. This is a team that's, what, preseason 24th in the AP, 18th in the coaches' poll. Yeah, that would be a big success. A year ago, it was all about the playoff. Going into the season, they were right on the edge of the playoffs and the preseason rankings, and if they got to that playoff, that was going to be a success. I would note that year as being successful. This year, anything at 8-4 or above would be a huge win for Tennessee. I think you finish 7-5, you kind of chalk it up to say, well, quarterback left, not much anyone can do. Anything below that, and Tennessee fans will be complaining about those ticket prices in Neyland Stadium that Danny White continues to raise. So get ready for that if they go below 7-5.
Chad, D-Mace had an interesting take on the whole Nico thing. As we get more removed from it, the dust has settled, he's at UCLA. D-Mace has a theory that Nico actually did, even though there was a lot of baloney thrown out there and a lot of rhetoric and things like that, that it was a legit thing to say that the offense, if you're trying to become a pro quarterback, the offense that Tennessee runs is not great for developing. You're not playing in an offense that's run in the NFL very much. Do you think that's a legit thing to throw out there?
Yeah, look, yeah. But, I mean, he also took $2 million to go play in the same offense that Josh Heupel's
right.
I mean,
I'm not even getting into that because that, for sure, is a big factor.
Like,
but
no,
I'm just
like,
looking,
I mean,
I'm talking about Heupel's offense, really. Do you think people looking at that saying, if I want to go to the NFL, I'm not sure that's the best offense for me to be playing it?
If you want to negatively recruit against Josh Heupel at the quarterback position, then you're going to say, okay, show me the great, you know, pro quarterbacks he's produced. Right, I think he coached Sam Bradford, who was the number one overall pick, but didn't have a great career. You know, he's coached some guys that have been drafted. Hendon Hooker doesn't look like he's very good right now with Detroit. If you're going to negatively recruit Josh Heupel in Tennessee, you're going to say, this isn't great producing NFL stars. Now, if I'm Josh Heupel in Tennessee, I say, okay, well, look at what our offense produces. It's one of the best in the country every year I've been the coach. I've got no sympathy for Nico in this. I mean, if you want to try to renegotiate the offense that you signed up to play in 2.5 years in, again, after taking over $2 million to sit the bench, you know, he wanted a raise, not factoring in that he didn't play in his first year and those checks still cashed. I got no sympathy for Nico in this thing. And the other thing that he was complaining about was the offensive line, right? And that's where it really started. You really started to meddle more and more. You didn't do enough to help the offensive line. We don't like this transfer from Notre Dame. We don't like the transfer from Arizona. You need to get rid of some guys and bring in guys that we know and like. Look, this is a case of a father meddling too much in his son's career. I really think it's that plain and simple. I don't think Nico's a bad kid. I think he is a guy who's going to listen to his dad no matter what. And I think his father led him astray in this whole deal. And we'll see how it turns out for him at UCLA. And maybe they're better at developing an NFL quarterback and he'll go on to a great career. But I think to try to, you know, paint that picture of, well, the offense doesn't produce great NFL players. Well, the same offense you signed up to play in when you came out of high school. So nothing had changed with that. And I don't think anything is going to change with Josh Heupel's offense.
But you're right about that, Chad. But can you see it from this standpoint? Because now everything that is happening in NIL – is pushing this, you know, collegiate level more toward a professional level. And we all know what it is. This is a professional level. So you're getting professional-type attitudes now where you're not helping me. Well, you need to bring in this guy. You need to bring in this guy because I'm your franchise quarterback. Because essentially that's what it is. I'm your franchise quarterback, so you bring in this guy, and this guy. And if you don't, I'm leaving. I think that's where all of this is heading eventually, where quarterbacks are going to start dictating how you position your team, especially after they become a starter and they produce on the field enough to where they figure they can call shots or their parents can call shots.
Oh, I think it's absolutely a problem. And Nico's not going to be the last that tries to do this. And I think, Derek, that is what the huge battle is going to be for head coaches, is how do you wrestle back control from this? I mean, I coach a travel softball team, and I've got parents who try to wrestle control of the team from me, right? I mean, a 10-year travel team, hey, my kids, this. I mean, you see that in travel ball growing up. So, of course, you're going to see it when you're talking about a $2 million franchise college football quarterback, right? So how those coaches fight that off is going to be interesting. And I'll say this for Nico. Like, all those things I would have taken as more valid if he just left after the Ohio State game. Yeah. In the normal window, if he would have said, look, I got pounded in that game. I don't like this offense. I don't think it's going to make me a better pro quarterback. I need to go try something different. I'm going to transfer out. I would have not liked it. But I'd have had a lot more respect for that move than trying to play this game after, you know, spring practice. When you're in the middle of that, and with everything going on, it would have given everybody a good chance to go do something different, right? Maybe Tennessee gets in the John Mateer game, who ends up going to Oklahoma. There's a lot of different possibilities out there of what Tennessee then could have done with that money to go get a quarterback. And instead, it just kind of put everybody in a bad, uncomfortable spot. And it makes Nico look bad, which you got to hate it for him if he's just following his dad's lead, but it does make him look bad, this whole thing. So, I think that Tennessee is going to be a productive offense, but no, it's hard to say that it's the best offense to produce college, NFL quarterback talent right now based on how it's run.
Chad Withrow from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on Outkick has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Chad, great stuff as always. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on. Always a good time.
Yep. Always a pleasure. 615-737-1025. Some breaking news out of the SEC.
I can't believe what I just read.
We will touch on it coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.